irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Dave's Good Vibration Station with Dave Cohen, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Guys, you've just tuned in to Dave's Good Vibration Station here on LATalkRadio.com, world's most listened to internet talk radio station. As you know, this is the show where we talk about anything and everything to raise your vibration. As you all know, if you have listened to the Vibration Station, or just remembered who you are, we are all vibrational beings living in a vibrational universe governed by the laws of vibration. What a beautiful Sunday to be sharing with everybody here. Thank you so much for being a part of this collective consciousness here on Dave's Good Vibration Station. Welcome once again to the show. I'm your host, Davey, and we're here to raise your frequencies. Well, what do we mean by that? A plethora of things. Each and every single moment of each and every single day, you have a choice to react to your surroundings, which we inevitably find out to be just a reflection of our consciousness. But how we react to these surroundings is what defines our vibration. What we think about, what we feel about, and that inevitably creates us as a being. With that said, I'd like to welcome a very, very special guest to the show. As you guys know, we are inspired by many people here on the Vibration Station. We ask them to come on the air with us and share their knowledge. It is my honor, as always, to welcome the one and only Bruce Rawls. Welcome to the Vibration Station once again. We're picking up from a couple. We've skipped a couple episodes, Bruce and I. You know, here on the Vibration Station, we like to, every single month we pick up. It's almost like we have a very special assigned monthly show to make sure that everybody understands the knowledge that Bruce has to share. So first and foremost, Bruce, welcome to the show again. It's such a blessing to have you here, my friend.
Thank you, David, for having me. It's always a joy. Yes. Always a joy and a privilege.
Well, thank you. Thank you, my friend. For those of you, I'm sure you're already familiar with Bruce, if you are avid Vibration Station listeners, which of course you are. And if you're not, then you are clearly not in the know. You guys got to check out thegeometrycode.com. There you're going to find a plethora of just mind-boggling, expansive, total quantum shifting in your consciousness information provided by Bruce himself, which is needless to say, one of the I'd call it the New Age Bible of the internet, if we went, because you pretty much can find anything and everything that you want to know about, you know, sacred geometry, quantum mechanics, and alignments with, you know, certain stars and tetrahedrons and spirals and everything that you could ever possibly imagine relating to geometry. TheGeometryCode.com would be the place for you to go. Actually, geometrycode.com would be the place for you to go. So thank you, Bruce, for providing us with such wonderful knowledge.
Well, thanks. I'm not sure if all that's on there, but at least there's a few fun things that people might enjoy.
and your animations are just, you can have a really fun time just checking out some of those animations. You know, cook a nice bag of popcorn and just sit and watch a couple of these animations for a couple hours straight, and you'll start seeing things, man. I'm not.
just popcorn, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Special popcorn,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, but it's a really, really wonderful, wonderful site that you've provided.
Well, thanks. I always have fun with it, and the whole intention is really to remind myself and anyone else who happens to enjoy it as a byproduct of the idea that, you know, we are one essence, and that I was going to make a pun on what you just said a moment or two ago of not being not in the know. And I think to play with your words a little bit, if you change the K-N-O-W to N-O, then actually you've touched on, I think, an important metaphysical principle, which is that it seems like our task here really is not to affirm the truth, but to look at all the ways that we deny it. So our curriculum really is a course, so to speak, in not know. It's and I'm borrowing that from a mentor of mine named Ken Wapnick, who's a brilliant fellow who shared with us some amazing stuff. But I think when we really look at what our task largely consists of, it's not to spew out affirmations and affirm what already is, because that doesn't really need our help. But what we need to do, because we've put so many barriers in our minds to that awareness of interconnectedness and the inclusion that really is a reflection of the oneness that we all are and all share and all have.
Yes.
So being willing to look at that and seeing that those misconceptions are just silly helps us, get the stuff out of the way that is the barricades or the barriers to that awareness.
Yes. Beautifully said. I mean, it just beautifully said, as always. And Bruce, that actually kind of leads us in to what I really wanted to discuss today is, for those of you, this is another thing that you guys must get privy to if you are not already. Bruce, in your book, actually, The Geometry Code, Universal Symbolic Mirrors of Natural Laws Within Us, Friendly Reminders of Inclusion, to Forgive the Dreamer of Separation. Probably my favorite book title in the history of the existence of this planet.
Well, I did try to pack a lot in there. I took a tip from Gary Renard, who says, yeah, you got to just make a long subtitle.
Because
publishers and places that put the titles and subtitles of books will use the whole thing. And so I said, why not, share 80-90% of the book in the subtitle? exaggerating a little bit.
No, I love it, man. I absolutely love it. If anything, that was one of the first things that brought me in. I was like, oh, this is going to be great.
Actually, it's sort of a disclaimer in the sense that the Geometry Code book started out being mostly about geometry, but then the more I got into it, and I realized it really needed to be about the thought systems that underlie that, which actually fit in a perfect segue to what we already talked about in our previous session, which is the first chapter, which you can actually get in as a download on for free on the Geometry Code website. And thank you again for mentioning that.
Yes.
But we're going to go now into the second chapter, which I think ties in beautifully with these two thought systems that the first chapter talks about.
Perfectly synchronous.
The first chapter is really about, you know, that we're either using inclusive thinking or exclusive thinking. We're thinking in terms of ultimately the oneness that we all share and how, you know, we really have the same interest of becoming awake to the reality that we are.
Yes.
And the other thought system being the one that is just no fun, but disguises itself as you know, fleeting conquests and accomplishments and all the things that we think we're trying to achieve in the world. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, taking care of yourself and your body and your family and your friends and your community and, you know, doing all the things we can in the world. But but to remember that ultimately, no matter what we do in space and time, there's a reality that's deeper than that, that we're all here to remember and help each other remember. And
so true. May I mention the title of the second chapter of the book?
Oh, please.
Which I think just leads. So the second chapter, which I love, is take home lessons from modern physics. All right, there's multiple really great subchapters in here. I'm just going to name a couple of the titles of the subchapters to plant seeds in the listeners' heads, and then we're going to get in to a little bit more. We're going to dive a little bit deeper, but we don't want to give it all away. Because, hey, you got to go into geometrycode.com and check it out for yourself. a couple of subchapters. So things aren't what they seem to be would be the first subchapter. I want to get into kind of the idea behind that. What Bruce, you could explain to the listeners what you meant by that. Another subchapter I love is life, self-fulfilling prophecy. The next one, which I have to say was definitely one of my favorites in chapter two, is love, quantum entanglement, and interconnectedness. I absolutely love this. So let's just kick off, and we'll get into it a little bit, and we'll see where it goes. So
sure.
So things aren't what they seem to be. When you wrote this, Where were you in time space?
I was thinking about what was going to go into this book over a number of years, better part of a decade, really, or more. And it was really only when I kind of got back into the non-dual metaphysics in 2007, inspired by Gary Renard's work, and which led me into Ken Wapnick's work, which led me to, you know, the whole realm of the pure non-dual metaphysics of A Course in Miracles in particular.
Yes.
That really needed to be the foreground material that tied into what led up to it for me, in any case, the sacred geometry and the background of physics. And I actually point to that in the first book, just as a personal aside, but I think it's relevant to your listeners, is that I'll keep this biography short, but I grew up here where I'm now speaking in Livermore, California. I've just moved back here a month ago.
Very nice. So
my dad worked on a cyclograph, like a cyclotron or an atom smasher, and that was his job for, you know, many years. So,
I love that.
So here
so
in the
much.
Livermore Valley,
that's
you know,
amazing.
that was what I grew up hearing, those kind of words like isotope and deuterium around the dinner table, thinking,
wow.
Well, doesn't every kid hear that kind of stuff? You know, not realizing until years later that, you know, that's kind of a sort of a unique experience.
Yeah.
Except for a few communities around the planet, you know, unless you live near, you know, the CERN facility in Switzerland or
yeah.
Berkeley or, you know.
Seriously.
Some of the places that have nuclear facilities, so Los Alamos, for example. But you know, that was kind of an interesting perspective. So I was interested in the physics, but even more so in the metaphysics. And so that's why I think this chapter, you know, evolved the way it did, because I always wondered, what's the meaning behind the form? What's the content? What's the take-home lesson, basically?
Yes,
And which is also why I started out the chapter with a couple of quotes from famous physicists.
I love that. Yeah.
So I just to start out with, if quantum mechanics hasn't profoundly shocked you, you haven't understood it yet.
You haven't understood it yet. One of my favorite quotes that you've introduced me to. I love it.
There's actually a little bit more to it that has been floating around the Facebook recently, and you could Google it and find it from that. But that's certainly it starts it off with the idea that, you know, we're just so clueless here. I mean, we get little bits and pieces through our senses. You know, just again to start with the premise that our senses are interesting but rather limited. We see one octave of light out of possibly an infinite number of octaves of electromagnetic energy.
Exactly.
We hear 10 octaves of sound frequencies and vibrations. This is the vibration station.
Right.
and then, you know, our other three, you know, biological senses, you know, take in just little drips and shadows of dribbles of reflections, of distortions, of, you know, little bits of information that's then further filtered and processed and interpreted through our egoic minds, and we think we have some kind of clue as to what's going on, and
right,
you know, how arrogant and presumptuous that is. We're all going to do it, but just if we can kind of catch ourselves and just laugh and just, you know, see the humor and the folly of that, of thinking that, you know, aside from just, you know, a few basic ideas about our immediate surroundings and that sort of thing. And even that, you know, we're basically all pretty clueless here.
So true.
But why not use what we think we understand and use it in the kindest and most beneficial way to ourselves and our community and our planet? And then that kind of ties again to another familial thing. And when we talked on the phone briefly before the show, we were talking about an aunt of mine who passed away. Gail Brower is her name, and just a few days ago, and her husband.
I'm so sorry to hear that, Bruce.
5 or 6 months ago, they were sort of my environmental mentors, and I think I've been thinking a lot about their lives and the impact they had on me.
Yes.
My Uncle Joe's brother was Dave Brower, who was head of, for many years, of the Sierra Club.
Oh, wow.
And also he started the Friends of the Earth and Earth Island Institute and was a pivotal figure in the environmental movement for many years.
That's amazing.
And so I kind of got that whole ethic by osmosis. I mean, just, you know, because the family just grew up with it. My aunt worked in Ansel Adams' studio in Yosemite as a kid. You know, and my grandpa was actually an engineer type on the Hetch Hetchy Aqueduct, so it has sort of interesting family dynamic going on.
That's amazing. That's amazing. It's in your blood, Bruce. Your blood.
But it is. But it's in everyone's blood. So I always like to bring it back to you know, from the personal to the transpersonal, because I think that's where we heal the differences that seem to happen. And I think that's what part of the ethic that my aunt and uncle imparted, and you know, the fond memories that I have of both of them, now that they're both, you know, seemingly gone. But the legacy that lives on in my mind is not only the kindness that they shared with our whole family, but also the caring, how important it was to care, not just for the planet, but for everything and everyone and all species and all things on it.
Wow.
And so I, you know, I really feel blessed that I had, you know, such a personal connection to, you know, even an iconic, if you will, figure in that arena. And but it really, you know, I think we all have so many ways that we can just notice that everything we do can make a positive difference, and not in any kind of a rabid, fanatical way of, oh, I have to do this and you know, save every little scrap of recycling and you know, yell at somebody to turn off a light, you know,
but
that kind of thing. It's like, think about the intention behind it, but the intention is really, how can we be kind to the most, you know, the greatest, you know, to everyone ultimately, and do it in the most effective way that is the most helpful. Anyway, so that was that example.
No, that's please. No, I was going to say that's so beautiful, Bruce. I'm sorry to interrupt. Please.
Oh, that's okay. No, that's pretty much what I was going to share about that is that that interconnectedness, I think, is at the core of that philosophy that isn't just a familial thing for me, but it also ties into the things that I've been drawn to, and I think a lot of people have drawn to, probably the people who listen to your show.
Absolutely.
It's probably more than serendipitous that you might be listening at this time, whether you're on the road or in your house or wherever. We all are drawn to understand ultimately that interconnection really is a reflection of the intrinsic unity that we all have. And I think that's where modern physics gives us some really interesting views in that. And what I, one of the first things I mentioned in that chapter is the Copenhagen interpretation.
Yes.
It's just when the folks like Niels Bohr, Albert Einstein, Heisenberg, Planck, some of these folks got together and they were really, they'd repeated the wave particle duality experiment, that the double slit experiment, so many times that it was incontrovertible. It's basically it's not a matter of if this is true, it's just now what do we make of it, and that's when they kind of looked at each other. It's like, well, the only conclusion that made any sense is that mind is primary.
Wow.
Or at least could no longer be eliminated from the equation because the expectations of the observers influenced the experiment. In fact, in this paragraph here, I'll just read the last little part of it. Says, the results of their own burgeoning understanding disoriented Bohr and Heisenberg, and some physicists concluded that the human observation of a microscopic event changes the reality of the event. And that's right out of Wikipedia, so I'm not just blowing stuff out of some metaphysical tome here. This is Wikipedia's, and they're pretty straight laced about
absolutely
keeping things scientific and all that, which is good, you want them to try to keep be as factual as possible, right?
Absolutely,
but the fact is that that really changed everything. And not only did it give us the electronics that we're talking on right now, the transistor and the semiconductor industry that just mushroomed from there, but also the idea, really, that which is a more long-range, far-reaching cultural change that I think we're still in the early phases of.
Yes.
I'm sure we are in the technological ones too, but the more profound cultural change is really the which is we're just at the beginnings of, really, I think, is the understanding that the mind is really primary, and it really can't be ignored in any discussion of physics. And so that the so-called reality that we think of as molecules and atoms and energy and protons, electrons, neutrons, and all the subatomic particles now that have been discovered and cataloged and so forth, that's all just a reflection of thinking. I mean, it really, and a lot of philosophers and mystics down through the ages have been saying that right along. So it's not a new idea.
Exactly.
It's not really a new idea, but when physics acknowledges it, that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. That's shifts. Cool. It opens a whole new door to the, I guess you could say, the mainstream understanding of our place in the universe, right? Because it's one thing to have a small groups of people that spread information, which therefore creates a larger collective understanding of whatever it is. But it's another thing to have a kind of worldwide accepted collective understanding of, this is our relationship to the electromagnetic particles in our universe, which therefore means this is our relationship with us and our universe. This is our relationship with everything, right?
Yeah, so exactly. And I think the word interpretation in Copenhagen interpretation is a hugely important clue because what it's basically saying is that we interpret the sensory data that we you know, nobody would deny that we have senses and we get, you know, this massive gigabyte stream equivalent, you know, mega gigabytes probably. You probably could calculate all the each individual photon and the acoustic equivalents and all that, and just those two alone is, and it's probably, you know, pretty massive amounts of data,
right,
even for our newly huge facilities for storing that kind of data.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah,
but even considering that, it's just basically a massive amount of interpretation.
Absolutely.
That's going on that takes that data, which, you know, it seems to be impinging on these senses, and we use that almost completely to affirm the idea that we are bodies,
right,
and that we are these finite machines that are buffeted around by forces beyond our control, and yada yada, and certainly the Newtonian model that preceded the quantum era, it still applies. And I remember in my college physics class when we got into I think it was called the Lorentz transformation. It was basically, you know, the take home lesson from that is that the Newtonian physics still works. It's just a subset of the quantum model. So there's other variables that you added to the Newtonian equations to get the more inclusive equation that explained more stuff.
Yes.
And so, you know, the classic one being velocity relative to the speed of light. You know, most of the time, you know, within our inertial frame of where we think we are we think we're on a fixed planet, but obviously it's spiraling in a helical path through around the galaxy, at an astronomical speed. But, you know, relative to the illusion of a static Earth, the things that are in our local environment typically aren't moving very close to the speed of light. So,
right.
So you can kind of throw out the V squared over C squared term that I remember from my college physics class. So when you approximate that, then the Newtonian model works pretty well.
Wow.
But what they were, you know, I'm not going to, you know, go down that path too much, but that's, you know, one example. But I think what those physicists did, by all coming together in Copenhagen, Denmark, you know, several decades ago, is when they kind of all looked at each other, and I can almost imagine, you know, their furtive glances at each other, like, well, okay, now how do we explain this to the world? You know, it's like, you know, the Newtonian model just isn't going to cut it anymore. And suddenly, you know, all this mental mumbo jumbo and the psychic realm and the mind stuff could no longer be swept under the rug as being, well, that's not a worthy subject for physics. Well, now it is.
Right. Right. Yeah. Exactly. And,
yeah. So given that, what it basically suggests is that if we change the nature of what we call reality, moment to moment, that means that there is some difference that is being made in the mind.
And, absolutely.
And the metaphysics that I've been studying and hopefully practicing when I remember to, when I remember my more mindful moments, is suggest that, you know, if we choose the thought system of inclusion, the thought system where shared interests and kindness and thinking in terms of how can I, you know, forgive myself for my misunderstandings and for dreaming up something that really only has a reality that I've given it. What that does is it not only lets everybody else off the hook,
right,
but it lets me off the hook too, because if we're all the same thing,
exactly,
and we're operating within a dream, then it frees us up to not only make a big deal out of things, but also to, you know, have more latitude in terms of the opportunities we have to be kind.
Exactly, exactly.
And to do the things that we can do
within
this surreal world to you know, make a positive difference.
Exactly. And please go on. No, I was just going to say it's literally like it literally opens in essentially Pandora's box, but to to the infinite possibility of anything that you can imagine actually actually becoming a physical, tangible reality.
Right,
you can literally transcend the idea that, okay, I live in a physical world and it takes, you know, this amount of time to get this amount of money if I work this hard and I need this person to make me happy. Like, you can literally think to yourself, okay, you can make a conscious decision through the observation of your reality, right? You can observe your reality, sift through the things that you do like, that you don't like, make a conscious decision to pivot your mind and therefore your thoughts, your feelings in a way that serves you, and that way you're kind of you're transcending the hologram. You're becoming.
Yes. Yes.
Right. So one of my favorite quotes of all time by Esther Hicks. She goes, the universe does not know the difference. And just as a pre note, a sub note, she uses money as a metaphor for anything that you are asking for in life. Let it be a relationship, a house, a job, no matter what it be. She's just using money as the metaphor, right? So she says, the universe does not know the difference between somebody that has $1 million or somebody that feels like they have $1 million. Universe doesn't know the difference. One way or another, the universe, due to the law of vibration, the law of attraction, action will yield to that individual a reflection of whatever they're expecting in consciousness. It's just so easy to keep getting the same of what you're already experiencing because you're so focused, your mind, your consciousness, and your vibration is stuck in this essential religious vibration of over and over and over again observing what's in front of you, having a vibrational response, observing what's in front of you, having a vibrational response, getting the same manifestation, observing what's in front of you, getting, you know, so it's this kind of vicious cycle that until you apply these understandings, until you understand the laws in which you as an energetic being are operating in, you're going to be stuck in an endless loop until you pivot those thoughts in a way that is yielding to your planet, yielding to you, and pretty much anything in your surroundings to the best of your imagination. So I don't know if I butchered that, but that's
no, you covered a lot of interesting ideas there. And one of the things that clicked for me was, you know, the transcending the hologram. And I think that's basically, if we can have those mindful moments where we recognize that what we are as essence,
yes,
as spirit, if you will,
yes,
not necessarily in religious terms, but in a more expansive definition, perhaps, than any particular cultural approach might be, to see that, you know, that if we can back up and have those lucid moments, like I think those physicists had when they realized that, okay, mind, we can't just ignore mind anymore. We can't.
Right.
We can't just, you know, sweep under the rug the idea that mind is more important than we've been giving it credit for.
Exactly.
Then we can recognize, well, not only is that the case, but maybe there's more to what we call our self, with a capital S self, than this little finite self that has specific goals and it seems to live on a particular place on a little planet or orbiting a, you know, a class whatever star in the galaxy we call a Milky Way. It sounds like a Monty Python skit, doesn't it? Or at least that Eric Idle song comes to mind. if you haven't seen that clip, I'll have to send you a link. But it's it's a fun song. And it's if you Google the Galaxy Song, you'll find it. But it makes some good points. You know, it basically is kind of like, you know, poking fun at the little tiny goals that we have. And not that we shouldn't do those things, you know, staying interested in your own career and livelihood and doing the best you can to help your community and your family and take care of your health and, you know, all those things. Great stuff. You know, why would we not do that? But at the same time, if we catch a glimpse now and then of a reality that's bigger than that self, then that, I think that helps put us in touch with the capital N mind that is all-inclusive, that is really what the mystics, I think, have been telling us. And this kind of goes beyond the physics a bit, but the mystics tell us that the reality that we all share is a single mind. And yes. that single mind is so all-inclusive and so complete that it doesn't need anything in this world. And we have moments where we get glimpses of that, I think, in every lifetime. We have moments where things at least remind us that there's that awareness that transcends, and I love that word, and goes beyond the holographic surreal dream that this world is. And that I think that's
without
where the physics comes in really handy as a reminder that this holodeck that we've made up, we didn't do it just by ourselves. You know, the David and the Bruces of the world didn't make our entire experience single-handedly. There's this unconscious level where if we could tap into that and recognize that the mechanisms by which our billiard ball reality is being fabricated not only include the individual thinking of David and Bruce and 7 billion others, but everyone in the entire cosmos and every thing and creature and stuff, and beyond that, maybe all the dark matter. But how do we know what the extent of that self really is? Well, it's kind of staggering and boggling to comprehend it. But that seems to make more sense. That's like, well, trying to single-handedly as a little pipsqueak self, lowercase s self, try to commandeer the cosmos and say, I'm going to make this world just the way I want it. And knock yourself out, give it your best shot. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I think there's plenty of room for, new age experimentation. But it seems like there's a deeper meaning, I think, that the physicists back in Einstein and Bohr and Planck's era stumbled onto. And that's why a more contemporary one named John Wheeler, who said there's no out there.
Right. I love that. I love when you say that. That's my favorite. It's one of my favorites.
It's basically if that's true, then we're just seeing a hologram. Well, there's nothing wrong with enjoying what seems to be happening out on this space-time dream planet of a world, and lamenting the things that seem to be amiss, like a passing of a dear aunt, for example.
Absolutely. And
doing what is appropriate for each person. But at the same time, it seems like there's a way to tap into, when we give ourselves permission, that awareness that says, there is an awareness that is bigger than the ghost in the machine, that the physicists called, that was the aspect of mind that they didn't want to look at. It's like, well, the Newtonian model didn't have any provisions for that. And that was kind of like blasphemy. And I was like, well, you can't talk about mind because that's psychology and that's not a real science, right?
Right.
Well, at least in that era.
Exactly.
But then there's the thing called the quantum entanglement experiment that basically showed that you could take two pairs of electrons. Mm-hmm. And if you remember from even my 60s era, chemistry and physics, that the orbital shells and the electrons typically occur in pairs,
and yes, indeed.
So if you take one electron of a pair, and you can in the lab, cyclotrons and whatnot, you can tilt the direction that the axis of one electron is pointing. It's just like the Earth's pole, is now pointing to Polaris. In another 12,000 years, it'll be pointed to, I think it's Vega or something like that.
Right.
But you can do that very quickly using electromagnetic technology and change, if you will, the vibration or the orientation, in this case, of the axis of an electron. What happens is that the corresponding electron in that pair will change its axis when you change axis of electron A.
Wow.
Electron A prime is the paired one.
Right.
It's going to change instantaneously, not at 100,000 miles an hour or speed of light. Or 100 times the speed of light. It's instantaneous.
And it could be at the other end of the universe.
Exactly.
For
all intents and purposes, that has been proved conclusively that's instantaneous no matter what the distance is.
That is amazing.
So the ramifications and the implications of that are just staggering, because what that means is that we're basically suggesting that either the speed of light is no longer valid, or everything in the cosmos is able to communicate
instantaneous
in some fashion, or at least selected portions of the universe are able to make, you know, kind of like the subspace communication that Star Trek had. You know, it's like maybe there's some mechanism.
Absolutely.
Well, what if the whole idea of searching for a mechanism, and this is where my non-dual metaphysics inquiry is, I think, could provide a tremendous clue. What if space and time themselves are a suspicious concept? Oh. Not that we you know, throw them out the window, because obviously, you know, we just drive in a car and brush your teeth and pay your bills and you know, do all the normal things that people do.
Right.
You know, you kind of need to, you know, use those man-made laws and the laws of physics that, as we understand them, and all that whole ram, you know, gamut of stuff that we
indeed.
You know, get by with. But
yes.
What if that is kind of like the Truman Show or the Matrix movies, or,
yes,
or some of these other wonderful metaphors,
yes, yes,
that suggest you know, Inception is a favorite movie, that, you know, we're just having this incredibly sophisticated dream.
Totally. Just
what if it's basically just a, you know, a Star Trek holodeck of unimaginable proportions?
Yes,
and
right?
we forgot that as a collective mind.
Wow.
We made up this whole colossal shenanigan of a dream.
Yes.
And then on successive levels of mindfulness, dropped down a ladder of forgetfulness to where we forgot that we as a unit, as a oneness, did this. And then we further confused ourselves by fragmenting ourselves into these seemingly countless individuals.
My
just
goodness.
just to, you know, make it all the more complex.
Bruce, that is that blew my mind, man. That was absolutely beautiful. That right there, I mean, is probably like I'm going to re-listen to the show and I'm going to write that down and quote you, Bruce, because that really, what you just said beautifully, is pretty much the definition of the relationship between the human understanding of our place, as I said earlier, in our universe. I mean, if we can understand that exact concept, if we can grasp for even a split second that we are fragmenting ourselves into these pinpointed, it's almost like we're so defined by our surroundings. It's so
well, and that's a choice.
Yeah,
that's the whole point. That's a choice of thought system.
Indeed, and that leads me to something that I really, with the last about 10 minutes of the show, I really wanted to touch on probably my favorite subchapter of chapter two, if that's okay. I just wanted to lead into this real quick. So a quote to start this subchapter, which I absolutely love. Since we're all interconnected at the highest levels of our being, it must take an enormous amount of energy to maintain the illusion of separation. Now, this is a quote entering the subchapter Love, Quantum Entanglement, and Interconnectedness, as I said earlier. So, Bruce, I mean, what you just said, literally, what you just said ties in, couldn't be more synchronous, ties in perfectly with this quote, right? Because if we do lift the veils, if you will, of, you know, separation, if we do stop pinpointing ourselves by these fragmented ideas of who we think we are, then we would live in a we would exist within a vibration of conscious interconnectedness.
Right.
So yeah, expand a little.
And thank you for sharing that quote. It's from dear friend my name, Dr. Leonard Laskow, and I worked with him when he lived in Ashland, Oregon, and I was there. And he and his wife Sam have since moved to Switzerland, but I still hear from them from time to time. But he's written a book called Healing with Love, which is and has done some wonderful workshops, and they're really centered all about forgiveness. That's the core of his teaching, even though he doesn't use A Course in Miracles jargon, which I have gotten into lately, but it's really a lot of the same ideas that we ultimately need to forgive ourselves, and that's why that subtitle of the book, you know, emphasizes that we need to forgive the dreamer, which is each of our seemingly individual selves, for having made up this colossal cosmos and of you know, propaganda that at every turn seems to reinforce the idea that we're separate persons, we've got, you know, separate interests, everybody for themselves, and that's the whole thing that is at the root of what makes this such a dysfunctional dream.
so true, man.
Yeah, I mean, as long as we're coming from that place of what's in it for me only,
right?
You know, it's never going to work. I mean, it may, you know, you may see people who seem to have, you know, the physicality of their lives, you know, just running along smoothly, but there's always this nagging sense of, well, what about everyone else?
Yes.
You know, what about the awareness that obviously if you have a potluck, you can't invite 7 people,
yes,
or excuse me, 7 billion people, you know, on the planet, all plus to attend your potluck, you know, with,
of course,
you know, with any kind of you know, sanity. But in our hearts and minds, if we can include everyone and everything, and, you know, all species, all beings, you know, the ones that we're aware of and ones we're not aware of, you know, and
so true
throughout the cosmos, as part of that same kinship, that same brotherhood, then that awareness really, I think, is what brings us back around to, you know, the quantum entanglement, if you will. That awareness that says, no, it's just a massive hallucination that suggests that those two electrons are apart.
Right.
And we've made up a paradigm or a belief system that says that we were pulled off the impossible. We split the atom. We pulled apart what could never be pulled apart except in a dream.
Wow.
And because of the incredibly high production value of this sophisticated dream, we have made an incredibly believable experience that we all just assume is the real deal.
Exactly.
And that's what I think modern physics, maybe not out front on the front page, but, you know, in the back rooms where they talk to each other, they realize that, you know, that's the case. In fact, I have a friend who's in one of my online study groups who's very versed in physics, and he mentioned that he, for the last few years of one of his colleagues' lives, Paul Dirac, who is another name that you will find in the annals of physics of that era, not only understood the physics very, you know, profoundly, but he also had some great insights in the metaphysics. My friend Mark was telling me at one of our study groups, he said, you know, well, yeah, Paul Dirac, he really did, you know, get a lot of this. And I think a lot of the people in that era, you know, whether they publicly admitted to that or not, Einstein's probably one of the more mystical of the bunch, but a lot of those people, you know, went on in their later lives to comment things that were very mystical in nature. And
absolutely.
And because what other conclusion can you draw if the reality that we assume is the big deal is just an interpretation?
Yes.
Then that changes everything. That basically says, you know, we're just making it up as we go along, and there's a deeper reality that we've covered over with this you know, high production value stage drama.
So,
and we're, and as one of Ken Wapnick's audios, he talks about I forget who the was it Schoenberg, so one of the famous philosophers or, you know, thinkers of a century or so ago, who said that we're all the secret theatrical managers of our mind.
That's a beautiful quote. That's beautifully said.
Yeah.
It's just so true. You know, Bruce, I just can't thank you enough. I every single time that we talk, and I have the honor of having you here on the Vibration Station.
Oh,
it takes me just a couple moments to really grasp what it is that we're talking about, and one last point that if you don't mind, I'd like to just introduce in potentially maybe closing the show with this point is just like how I get extremely excited, you know, to speak with Bruce, you know, on our Sundays that we share together here on the Vibration Station. I do not traditionally think, you know, just as Bruce and I were talking about earlier in the show, you know, I don't always think to myself these high vibration thoughts. I'm not always in this state of being so open and understanding, if you will, how important it is to remember the things that we forget on a moment-to-moment basis. But right. I guess my point to saying this is if we're able to come together on a Sunday, you know, from 1 to about 1:50 and just really open up our minds and understand that there is currently existing in the moments that we're talking, the opportunity, not only is it available, it's our right. It's our right just as air is right for our lungs to be, do, and have anything and everything that we could imagine, bringing ourselves and therefore this planet a greater joy than we could ever possibly imagine. And I think that, you know, Bruce, thank you for maintaining this high vibration. Thank you for being, you know, true to yourself. Thank you for not, you know, conforming to what the as we would say, you know, the theatrics of life have provided for us. Thank you for staying true to the knowledge that you've always known will inevitably lead this planet and other planets in the solar system that are governed by the same laws to enlightenment. So I love you, Bruce, to say the least, and I love all that you stand for. I love geometrycode.com, and I love your book, The Geometry Code. There's just all the unconditional love from our hearts to yours here at the Vibration Station and LA Talk Radio. And my condolences and all of our love go to your aunt, who is now sharing time with us. I'd like to say potentially she's in the studio agreeing and shaking her head with a thumbs up. You never know. So
well, I've been certainly blessed with that inclusive archetype in my life, and I think, like what you touched on, is a good reminder that, you know, we need to be kind to ourselves and forgive ourselves for when we have those long lapses to where it just seems like it's just our own interest, and just realize that, you know, ultimately we're already home. We're already perfectly unified.
Yes.
with that oneness that can't even be put into words. But every time we have a mindful moment and realize the entanglement and realize the interconnectedness and realize the life, love, strength, beauty, purity, perfection, and gratitude, the first six of which were actually part of a book called Life and Teaching of the Master of the Far East that I read as a teenager. And I just put those six words and added a seventh for those chapter subtitles. That those are the qualities that we all share, and we can remember them whenever we choose to be grateful for that awareness.
So true.
Yeah.
So true.
And thank you for having me on your show.
Of
really
course.
Appreciate it.
Of course, Bruce. And I'm looking forward to next month. Guys, you can definitely keep updated with what we're doing here on Twitter. That's at Good Vibe Station. Please make sure to check out geometrycode.com here on, on the website. But also, thank you for joining us here on latalkradio.com, Dave's Good Vibration Station. Bruce, we love you so much, and we'll talk to you next month, brother.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you. My friends, family, lovers, and friends, and gratitude generators, all the unconditional love, light, happiness, joy, and laughter from my heart to yours. Check us out, Good Vibe Station, on Twitter, and we will see you next Sunday. Love you guys. Bye-bye.